This is Start Us to the Rest of Us, episode 167. Welcome to Start Us to the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's the word this week, Rob?
You know, things are going pretty well. I've been spending some time in the code. I've been working on the hittail keyword algorithm. I mentioned that, you know, since not provided came through, I found that through the Google Webmaster Tools, there's another source of a bunch of keyword data. And so I've spent a lot of time repurposing and tweaking that algorithm. And it's actually giving me a better, you know, before we, hittail could say, hey, here's a keyword. And yes, it's a suggestion you should write about or not. Now I actually have a gradient where I can give it a score, and it's a number on a like a 1 to 100 scale. So it's been fun to get back in the code. I'm ready to kind of get this thing out. Right now it's in alpha, and I have 4 different people who've, you know, sent me spreadsheets, and I'm uploading them and seeing how it goes. But it's nice to be moving forward with the goal of getting hittail back on track, basically. Growth had really stalled, and things starting to go sideways with it as the value that it provides is a lot less than it did 4 or 5 months ago.
Oh, that's really cool that you're able to assign a score to those things that you, so people have some sort of a ranking to help them decide what they should do next. That's one of the things that people had asked me to do in AutoShark was they're like, this information is great, but I need you to score it so I know what to concentrate on. The analysis paralysis that people tend to experience when they just really don't know what it is that they're looking at and they don't have a basis for comparison, that really hurts. And giving them those benchmarks or those ways to sort the data, it can be really, really helpful.
Yeah, I agree. So hopefully getting that out into production in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to need to get a designer on board to make some, you know, minor tweaks to some stuff, and then I'll probably hire a developer. It's just enough work. I think it'll probably be 20 to 30 hours of work because there's some complex stuff to actually implement it, you know, at scale. I realize these days, man, if I need to get 30 hours of coding done, it's going to take me like a month to do it. Because I can't get into flow ever because there's so many little things going on. But hopefully, fingers crossed, you know, another few weeks, maybe end of February, have that all up and running.
Very cool.
How about you? What's going on?
Well, I got an email from Wes O'Hare, who put together a resource website for people who make web products. And the URL, we'll link it up in the show notes, is products.co, and it's products.co. So check it out if you want. There's a lot of good information on there, a couple of things I've never heard of before. So if you're building a web startup of any kind, there are definitely some good resources there.
I wanted to call out 2 things. The first is I was on a podcast this week. It's the Linchpin podcast, and I was talking all about email marketing and creating email mini courses. So linchpin.net/podcast if you want to check that out. It's a short one. It's probably 25, 30 minutes. The other thing is Brennan Dunn, a Lifetime Academy member, he and I were emailing about some stuff, and I loved the story he sent. He said, hey, I set a new personal record. I had an idea for a WordPress plugin last Friday, learned how to write said plugin over the weekend because I've never really dug into WordPress before. I ran paid ads today, plus some inbound from my blog, and so far I've netted 2 new customers who weren't friends or in my network. I love it, right? It's like a super fast implementation. Talk about taking action. It's at WordPressConversionFunnel.com. And if you do nothing else, check out that URL because look at the way Brennan puts together this sales page. It's a long-form sales letter. It's written from his perspective, and it's all about how the tactics that he's included in this WordPress plugin has helped his own business. Very elegant, well put together, very folksy, right? It's like it feels like you're just having a conversation with someone and they're kind of just telling you about something while you're sitting at a bar. I wanted to share that with the audience and kind of give them an example of a way to, you know, get something done well and to do it fast and execute like Brennan did. So congrats, sir.
We're talking about how to organize and run a startup mastermind. And over the past couple of months, I think that you've probably gotten just as many questions as I have, if not more, about, you know, what is a mastermind? You know, how do I go about putting one together? What sorts of things go on? How can it help? So what we're going to do today is we're going to take some time and set aside the entire podcast episode for talking about a startup mastermind and, you know, some of the different experiences that you and I have had in running our own.
And to give you some background, the term mastermind, as far as I know, was first mentioned by Napoleon Hill in the book Think and Grow Rich. And if you read through that, it's going to almost barely resemble what we're talking about today, because A, things just have developed so far in the past 75 years since he wrote that book, and B, we do some very specific things that work very well because we're talking about a startup mastermind. It's not just the generic, you know, group of people getting together to talk about something, but we're really focused on a startup, right? On the startups that you're all running with other founders. And so I think that's something to keep in mind. The other thing I'd like to mention is that one of the reasons we're doing this episode is because Mike and I have realized the value of masterminds in our successes and just the power of community, you know, through MicroConf and through the Micropreneur Academy. And that's one of the big reasons that we are revamping micropreneur.com this year. And we're going to put an extra focus on community. And this mastermind stuff will be part of that. I mean, we want to foster, you know, help people get involved in masterminds and help them run them well, whether they set up local micropreneur meetups, as we're seeing spark up. Last count, there were approaching maybe 10 worldwide of these micropreneur meetups, just people getting together. That's a little different than a mastermind, but there's overlap there. And then the flip side is, you know, setting up Skype masterminds, as we'll surely talk about in this episode.
So the first question that somebody might have is, what is a startup mastermind? And to me, a startup mastermind is a group of people who are business owners or have applications that they are selling online, and they want to talk to other people who are in a similar boat, other people who are encountering similar problems, have a similar type of business, because if you're talking to somebody who's running a brick and mortar type business, they're going to have very, very different problems than you would as somebody who's selling software over the web. So you really want to make sure that you are talking to people who are in at least a similar situation as you. And these types of people will help you make decisions. You can open up to them. You can talk about the types of problems that you're having. They can give you suggestions. It tends to be a lot easier to talk to these types of people than it is to talk to your customers or your employees. And as a business owner, it can be very, I'll say, isolating when you're running a business and maybe you have employees or contractors and you need advice, but you don't necessarily know where to turn. And a startup mastermind can really help with that, because you can open up and you can talk about a lot of different things and essentially lay all your cards on the table and get the feedback that you really need in order to move your business forward. And if you don't have a mechanism for doing that, then you may very well be reduced to talking to your spouse or talking to your friends who, if they don't do that sort of thing, then they don't have any basis for making decisions or offering advice. And it becomes very difficult to get anything out of those conversations.
Your spouse, your employees, and your non-founder friends will never, ever understand what it is you're doing at the level that you need them to actually provide you with helpful support and feedback. You must have someone who understands. Founders are a different breed, and what we're doing in startups is such a unique thing that, you know, talking to your parents or, you know, God forbid, your employees about this, it almost never yields helpful information. I think the point that you brought up about isolation is a big one, and I just double underline that on the notes I'm taking here. Isolation is something you need to avoid. I've gone through it a lot. I think a lot of founders go through it. I see a mastermind as a way to get a group of supportive people around you, a way to have accountability, a way to have people invested in your startup, not financially, but just mentally invested, without having a co-founder. So, you know, if you do have one or two co-founders, I don't know that you necessarily need a mastermind, because that's kind of, you have your mastermind there. But especially if you're a single founder, I view the startup mastermind as a semi-replacement for having co-founders.
So the next question you might have is, how many people should you have in your startup mastermind? And this number, I think, can vary quite a bit. I've heard a lot of people say, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5. I think I heard one group that had, I think, 6 or 7 people in their mastermind. I feel like that's way too much. My mastermind group has 3 people in it. And with 3 people, we each get about half an hour to talk, and we talk about our own products, and we each talk about our own stuff every single time we meet. So it's not as if you're going 2, 3, 4 sessions or something like that without talking. Half an hour seems like it's enough time for you to be able to get through everything you're talking about. And if you go a little bit long, it's usually not a big deal. But to me, I feel like 3 people is a good number to have. I think that it can work well if you have 2 people. I think that once you get gets start getting to four or five people, I feel like the mastermind gets too big and people don't necessarily have enough focus, and you spend more time waiting than you do talking about the things that you're working on and getting the feedback that you need to move forward.
Yeah, I take a pretty hard line on this. I think a mastermind, a startup mastermind, only works with 2 to 4 people. And I've been in one that was 2 people, and it worked great. I think 3 is the ideal number, because then you're getting 2 perspectives on things instead of just the other person's. You want someone to have 20, 30 minutes to really get in deep, because if each person has 5 minutes to talk, you just can't understand really what's going on with their business. Now, I have heard of masterminds, like you said, with 5, 6, I've heard of 8-person masterminds. Those are just run entirely differently than what you and I do. Those are run where it's like every meeting, 1 or 2 people get to speak for a longer period of time. You know, maybe you get 20 minutes when you're on the hot seat, and everybody else only gets a 5-minute update. I can't imagine being part of a group like that. That's not, call that a startup mastermind. Maybe that's some other type of meetup or something else, but it's not at the level that we're talking about when we're using the term startup mastermind.
So the next question is, how often should you meet? And I've heard of a lot of other groups that will meet once a week or even a couple of times a week. My group meets once every other week. And I feel like every other week is the right amount of time, because with half an hour allotted to each person, you get to talk a fair amount. But then at the end of it, there's an accountability area. And that gives you the week in between each meeting gives you enough time to really buckle down and work on those things. And if you run into any sort of issues, you still have time to be able to get some of that stuff done from 1 week to the next. If you're meeting every single week, it almost feels like any sort of commitments that you have or that you set for yourself, it may very well be very difficult to meet some of those commitments just because you don't have enough time to do it. And it's like, okay, well, I've got this thing that I'm going to work on, and it's going to take me 2 weeks to do or 3 weeks to do. And your report for the week is, you know, for 3 or 4 weeks straight is going to be, well, yeah, I'm still working on that, and I'm not done yet. And sure, you can go into a lot of detail about it, but to me, it seems like every other meeting every other week has worked out really, really well for us. And, you know, with that sort of a schedule, you can still move it around a little bit during the week. It's not that big a deal. I think that we've only had to move ours, I think, twice, but we still resorted to email updates on those weeks where we just couldn't meet. There's ways around that sort of thing. But to me, it feels like once every other week is probably ideal. I think you could get away with once every week. I think, Rob, you're in one that meets every week, right?
No, both of mine are every other week, and it's for the reasons you've outlined. There just isn't enough time to bite off a large enough chunk to make it interesting if you meet every week. Plus, if your mastermind, like you said, yours runs 90 minutes, and mine typically run between 90 minutes and 2 hours. And that's a big chunk to bite off every week, just to sit down and talk about work and not actually work. And so to bite off 2 hours a week and kind of, I won't say kill that time, but, you know, it's helpful in the broader sense, but to not be able to be productive for those hours would be a big deal. I agree with you pretty wholeheartedly that every other week seems to be the ideal tempo. You know, if it's struggling kind of with your business or with the mental side of it, that then it would feel like too long. And that there's not enough accountability, and then you could feel isolated. So that's where I feel like the 2-week touch point, that even if you're having a rough time, that's often enough that it can kind of get you back on track.
So here's another question for you specifically. Since I'm only part of one mastermind group, you said that you're in 2 different ones. How does that work, and how does that, I guess, correspond to when you were a member of just one? Because I imagine the experience is a little different. But as you said, dedicating that time every week would be really hard. But again, you're in 2, so you're basically dedicating twice as much on those weeks where you do have the meeting, and then none when you don't. Do you find that it's more helpful to have a second one?
So that's a good point, because since I'm in 2 every other week, it's kind of like I'm in 1 a week. The reason that it works for me is because I'm not in 2 Skype mastermind groups. I feel like for me, that would be too much time, because that would essentially be 2 hours every week on Skype. One of them's in person and one of them's via Skype. And the Skype one is with some more experienced founders who are in other parts of the country. And we really dig into a lot of nuts and bolts and detailed stuff that literally, you know, maybe 10,000 people in the world have any interest in at the level that we're talking about. I mean, it's just such a small, maybe it's 50,000, but it's just a tiny, tiny number. And so there just aren't that many people who can discuss the intimate metrics that we're talking about and really understand the design of them. And so that's where the Skype comes in, is, you know, just finding people to do it is tough. The in-person one is a little more casual. It's a little more fun, and we almost always do it at happy hour. And so we go to like a pub, and you know, we'll have a few drinks, and we'll have appetizers, and then we'll chat. Sometimes we'll do it at my house, and I'll host, but it's basically the same thing. I'm pouring drinks, and we're hanging out in the evening. So that's where I almost use it as it's both a social slash, you know, have fun type thing, but we also, we do get into the nitty gritty of our businesses, but our businesses aren't as closely aligned as with the Skype mastermind. I think I'd have a tough time being in two intense, hardcore masterminds like my Skype mastermind is.
Do you find that you actually get anything done while you're drinking like that, or no?
Yeah, we do. I mean, it's not like we're frat boys doing keg stands. I mean, we're having conversations, we're reading from notes, taking notes, asking opinions, definitely making decisions and helping each other. Yes, we definitely get things done. The nice part about being in person is a couple guys come over and we're sitting in there chatting and having drinks for 3 hours. It doesn't feel that long because we're just hanging out. But being on a 3-hour Skype call is pretty irritating. You know, it just gets old and you're sitting for too long. And we can be more casual with the time and even at times go into more depth on certain topics just because you have the luxury of, you know, being there in person.
So one of the things that we did, which was actually a recommendation from you, was when we were setting up our startup mastermind, one of the things that we did was we essentially set up expectations for what that mastermind should be and what we expected from everybody. And two of the things that really came out of that was, one, an expectation of complete confidentiality from everybody. Anything that you talked about during that meeting or during those various meetings would not go beyond the people that were there. And that was kind of regardless of the topic, whether it was personal stuff that came up or whether it was business related or contracts and stuff like that, you know, because there are legal issues that you may need to discuss with people. And those are the things that you don't necessarily want going out to anybody else or discussed outside of your circle. The second thing that also came as a recommendation from you was having a opt-out clause after some sort of a trial period. I think it was something like 8 weeks to say, is this working for me or is it not? Because 8 weeks, it sounds like a long time, but it was really just 4 meetings. And I think that if you don't really gel as a group within 4 meetings or so, it probably isn't going to happen, and you might want to go off and find other people to be part of your startup mastermind group. Are there other rules that you would set up in your masterminds?
I can't think of any, but the confidentiality, I think, is one that I want to underscore, because if I'm going to do this, if you're going to be serious about this, you need to bring it to the table. Like, I bring everything. I bring my lifetime value, my customer churn numbers, revenue, net profit, stupid decisions I make. I bring stuff in there that I don't talk about with anybody else. And that means there has to be confidentiality. Like, they can't go talking to other people about it. I think that's a key. And then, you know, you mentioned the opt-out clause. That's something that I've done with both of mine. And I think the important thing is that you're going to be probably setting this up with people you know, right? It's kind of friends. And so if it doesn't work out, there really needs to be a no hard feelings opt-out period, 4 to 6 or 8 meetings or whatever. So as you said, yours was 4 meetings. And I think that's the ideal duration to really figure out if you're going to get value out of it. Because, you know, think about it. If you get in there and you're talking, and maybe let's just say you think you know these acquaintances or these friends, and you get in and one person just dominates and doesn't really offer a lot of information, and you feel like you're wasting that 90 minutes every 2 weeks, you need to feel comfortable that you can say, you know what, guys, this just isn't working for me. I'm sorry, you know, and be able to back out and have that no hard feelings thing. Just as anyone else who comes in, maybe they just, you know, don't feel comfortable, they want to be on their own or whatever, that you don't have the judgment of them if they decide to leave. So I think those are some pretty key aspects of it to keep it less stressful, because anytime you're setting something like this up with friends, it always has the potential to kind of go downhill.
So in terms of logistics, we talked a little bit previously about the schedule. And for us, we have a very regular schedule. We meet every Tuesday night at 8:30, and it's from 8:30 till about 10 or 10:30. Do you use a regular schedule or no?
So the Skype one is a regular schedule every 2 weeks, Wednesday morning. And then the in-person one was regular for a while, and now we've kind of let it flux. And I'll find that we, unless one of us thinks about it, it'll go 3 weeks. And it's even over the holidays went, I think, a month. I was thinking the other day that we need to get it back, because it used to be every Thursday afternoon at 3 o'clock at this one place. You know, there's a happy hour. And so we probably just need to kind of pencil that in again. I think there's a lot of value to making it regular, because if you have to plan it individually every time, it's so frustrating. But if everyone just blocks this thing out for the next year and blocks out that same time on Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever, that's really the way to go.
Yeah, I think that you and I found that even just recording this podcast very, very early on, just setting that regular schedule really helped, because it was like, oh, well, you know, at this time and every single week, I know that I have X planned, so I can't plan anything else for that, as opposed to saying, okay, well, I could move this around, or you're always trying to find a place for it. And it's just logistically, it's hard to think and plan for stuff when it's constantly changing every week. So I really feel strongly that having that regular schedule is extremely helpful, not just for Mastermind, but for other things that you're working on. So the same point, using the same type of meeting mechanism every week to prevent technical issues or from cropping up, and switching, let's say, between Google Hangouts and then to Skype and then to something else, always trying new things just because they're new. I feel like that's not really conducive to having a mastermind. We use Google Hangouts every week. I think you said you use Skype.
Yeah, we used Google Hangouts for a while, but they kept changing the interface and it was causing us problems, just the technical part of it. People weren't getting invites and all this stuff. So we have switched to Skype. I paid for you have to pay for a pro account for a year. It's like $50, but then you can do the multiple video Skyping with multiple people. And so I just forked it over, and now, you know, at 10 a.m. we're all there and I call both people.
Yeah, we've definitely had some issues with Google Hangouts. It depends on what everybody's comfortable with, whether you use Google Hangouts or whether you use Skype. I would definitely recommend this, and I think, Rob, you'll probably agree with me, that you definitely want to use something that has video. I think that's something that people might overlook when they're beginning to build up a startup mastermind. And I think that it's just, people don't necessarily think about it, but I think having that face in front of you where people are talking and you're actually seeing them talk and facial expressions and having them be able to hold stuff up and show you things, that is such a valuable experience because it just adds so much context to the things that they're talking about. If you're just hearing this voice on the other end of the line, it's a little bit disconnected and it doesn't necessarily give you the same impression that you get when you're talking to somebody through video.
Invaluable. Yep, I echo that.
So what about accountability? We have our own mechanism for accountability, but what do you do in yours?
So we use Google Docs. We have a single Google Doc with bullet points and the three people's names in the doc, and then we talk about what we've done and what we're planning to do over the next 2 weeks and challenges that we faced or stuff we need opinions on. I'll admit that as of late we've started to fall off the wagon with that. I've just started it up again with the most recent mastermind meeting and started updating that Google Doc again, but we did that for maybe 6 months and then just kind of, we go from the top of our head now, and it's not quite as valuable, I think, to be able to look back through the history. It's really interesting to look through the history and see what you've talked about and to think, wow, you know, I remember when this was making $1,000 a month and now it's making, you know, that's just crazy that I was actually at that point. I mean, it really gives you a sense of accomplishment and a sense perhaps of what the group has done for you. Beyond that, I know you guys touch base between, or you have a message that comes out between your meetings, and I think that's a really good idea. I've never done that, but I think it could be really helpful. Why don't you tell folks how that works?
Sure. So as I said before, our startup mastermind meets on Tuesday nights between 8:30 and 10 to 10:30, however long it goes. And what I do is I essentially assign myself to be the scribe for the startup mastermind. And what I'll do is I basically keep track of who is supposed to be speaking and what the schedule is. So there's three of us and, you know, everyone's got an assigned slot. And then if I spoke first this week, then the next time that we meet, I would speak third, and then I would speak second, and then I would speak first again. And we just rotate so that everybody starts, you know, in different slots. So it does rotate, and that's definitely helpful. The other thing that we do is there's essentially three different things that I take notes on. The first one is what people's previous commitments were. And those are generally copied from the previous week. So whenever I start a new meeting, I fire up Evernote and I throw everything in there. And I basically write down everything that they had said that they were going to accomplish last time. And then I have a section for what people's accomplishments were. And then what they have said that they are going to accomplish the following week or the following time that we meet. And then what I do is once the meeting is done, I take the three sections for what people have committed to doing by the following meeting. I throw those into an email that I send out using Boomerang that I schedule for the following Tuesday. I might do it on Monday, I forget which, but it's basically early in the following week so that once about a week goes by, you may have kind of forgotten about what your some of your commitments were to the group to the, for the next meeting. And that email in your inbox basically becomes a trigger that says, hey, these are the things that you said you were going to get done. Where are you? So, and I started this, I don't know, it was probably about after 6 or 7 meetings, because I started to realize, hey, I'm waiting until Monday to start working on some of these things and go back and look and see what it is that I should have been doing for the last 12, 13 days. So instead, as a trigger to myself, I was like, oh, well, let me remind myself that of the things that I should have been working on. And I said, well, why don't I just send this to everybody? And, you know, people loved it. I mean, you know, nobody complained about it. Everyone said, hey, that's an awesome idea. Really, thanks a lot for doing that. And it's worked out really, really well. And I actually even get requests here and there for me to resend it on occasion if we move a meeting or if we have to skip one because of a holiday or something like that.
Yeah, I really like that idea. I can see the value of it. When we're having our masterminds, I'm taking notes and then I typically put them into my Trello board. You know, when I say, here's what I'm going to do over the next 2 weeks, I put them in Trello to do, but that can get lost pretty easily. If I come back and there's a bunch of email and I really don't get back to Trello because I'm too busy churning through a bunch of fires, it's easy to forget that. So I could see a lot of value in having that email sent out in the off week.
The one thing that I liked about what you said was that you guys use Google Docs, and I don't know, I guess I didn't really think about that because I throw all of my notes into Evernote and then I just have a separate note for each of the meetings that we have, but it probably makes a lot more sense for me to switch over and take everything, throw it into a Google Doc and then share it with everybody so that everybody can see the entire history of everything as opposed to me just having the history in Evernote.
Right. And then other people can modify it if maybe, you know, you misquote by accident or you just, you know, put something in there, or they decide they want to add some extra things. It's kind of nice to be able to collaborate.
Mm-hmm. So the next major question that I think somebody might have is how to find people for your mastermind. And I think this is a hard question because you really have to look at who your peers are and you have to know the people that you're going to invite. I mean, you at least want to have some sense of what it is that they do. You want to make sure that they are doing the same types of things that you are. And for me, I met the people who are in my mastermind group at MicroConf. So for me, that made it extremely easy. If you're going to MicroConf, definitely look around for people to join a startup mastermind with. But what about you? How did you go about finding the people who are in your startup mastermind?
Pretty much the same way. It was through MicroConf and the Academy and just, you know, kind of the stuff we're doing. I can't imagine starting a mastermind with someone I had not met in person. I've received this question, how do you find people for your mastermind? And I've heard suggestions like, well, go on forums or get to know people via email and this and that. That might work, but there's always a large part to how people interact. And, you know, the intimacy of a startup mastermind and what you're sharing, it really depends on interaction style. Do people listen? Do they always want to talk? Do they want to dominate? Do they just want to give advice? Like, there's a lot of subtlety there that you can't pick up over a forum or another non-in-person mechanism. So personally, I would go to an in-person event. The most masterminds I've heard come out of anywhere is out of the MicroConfs. We hear these micropreneur meetups and masterminds springing up out of MicroConf Europe. A number of them have already come out of it. And same with the Vegas one. And I think the other place where I have seen stuff start to spring up is, of course, the Academy. I mean, it's our membership website. So there's a community there. And like I said, this year, we're going to be doubling down on that and really focusing on building that community and expanding it. And so that's the kind of place that I think you can go. I don't know if you can go to a public forum like the old Joel Business of Software stuff or answers.onstartups.com or those kinds of places. I don't know if you can go and do that. I've never done it and I haven't heard of it being done. I'm sure it's possible, but I really think that you kind of have to go to that in-person aspect. The other thing I'll say is if when you're looking for the types of people to invite, you really want to find people that are ahead of you. In an ideal world, the other two people would be just enough ahead of you that they still remember what it's like to be where you are, but that they can give you advice based on what they've learned. Now, obviously, that's not possible if there's three people. Everyone can't be ahead of the other. But what I have found interesting is that in the masterminds I'm in, there's typically some expertise in a certain area. So one guy might be really solid on UX and ahead of everybody else. And another person might be ahead in terms of like high touch sales. And another might be ahead in terms of content marketing. Another ahead in terms of paid advertising. Like there's these different aspects of it. And so I think when you're setting up a mastermind, don't just grab the first three people you know who are your friends and who are also founders, but think about who is doing what I'm doing. So if you're running a SaaS app, try to find two other SaaS founders. If you have WordPress plugins, try to find two other WordPress folks. And if you're doing info products, you know, try to find info products, etc. It's not to say that that's the only way to do it, but I think that in the ideal scenario, if you're B2B, they would also be B2B, and the type of software, and they would be relatively close to you, you know, within, let's say, a year ahead or behind you in terms of the path you're traveling as a founder.
I found that even when you're working with other people in the mastermind group, it's really nice to get that additional perspective because other people have different experiences than you, especially if their backgrounds are different. So I don't know as I would necessarily shy away from people who are not SaaS founders, for example, because Audit Shark is a SaaS-based business, and the people that are in my mastermind group, none of them have a SaaS-based business right now. So I still get a lot of good information from them, though. So I don't necessarily know as I would shy away from them. I've gotten a lot of great things out of it, and even just in how to deal with a recurring revenue business, they've had some really, really great ideas that I've been able to take and implement. There's other sides of it as well.
Absolutely. It can work both ways for sure.
It depends a lot on the type of people. But I mean, we've kind of talked about that. It's like you need to have the right types of people and make sure that the personalities don't clash and get that trial period or opt-out clause in there so that somebody can walk away with no hard feelings as long as things are working.
I think what you're saying is personality may trump similarity of business, and I would agree with that. That the personality mix in your mastermind is going to have 80% to do with whether or not it's actually successful. Because again, if you get people, you know, if you come into the mastermind and you feel judged or you feel put down, or you, again, you feel like someone dominates, you feel, you know, there's just personality clashes in any direction and people are trying to pull away, it can really degrade the experience of the mastermind and it ruins the trust. I've also heard of masterminds going downhill because certain people just don't show up. Or they don't, you know, they commit to stuff and they just never do it. I mean, there's a bunch of things that can really kind of degrade the experience. And so you have to think to yourself, you know, are these folks reliable? And are they someone who I want to spend 2 hours talking to every other week and really invest this time? Because that 2 hours is valuable. You know, as a founder, you can do a lot with that. I think you really need to think hard before you get into a mastermind relationship. And I think that you need to make sure that the folks are going to be compatible with kind of your working style. So that's our show for today. If you have a question for us, call our voicemail number at 888-801-9690 or email us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Startups or by RSS at startupsfortherestofus.com, where you'll also find a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. See you next time.